You know, tomorrow is Groundhog's Day.
It's here already.
Or Groundhog Day, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Groundhog Day.
And, of course, that was a great movie. And I'm trying to figure out how to whip this thing around to make sense of what we're going to do here. But I'm going to do it.
I like the way the segue's going already.
Yes.
Maybe we should get a groundhog for a show pet.
We're having a tortoise tomorrow.
It's an audition.
We probably should have gotten. You know what? I had the great unfortunate reality to have to interview a groundhog on live television.
Oh,
I think almost everybody who's ever worked in TV has had to do it.
I want to do it.
And the groundhog started hissing at me.
Were you getting too close to it? Were you touching it?
No, it was like I was just. I was on set.
Oh, did you ask about Mrs. Groundhog? Maybe you upset it.
I don't know. And I looked at it, and I was like, and I'm like, okay, so what do you what do you think? And then it.
Oh, that's not a good sign.
Oh, that's terrible.
Like, uh-oh.
Oh. We should see if the tortoise tomorrow sees its reflection or sees its shadow and be our own groundhog.
Yes. We're going to have a tortoise auditioning to be the show pet tomorrow. Anyway, this is a long way of saying that Trevor Albert is going to join us.
Sorry, Trevor.
Trevor, yeah. We apologize for this. None of this is going to make a ton of sense. But Trevor is actually one of the producers of the movie Groundhog Day. And tomorrow in Woodstock, they're actually doing their Groundhog Day in Woodstock, the 25th anniversary, because Woodstock is where they shot the movie Groundhog Day, even though it was technically supposed to be in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have that approximately right, Trevor? I think I do, right?
That sounds exactly right.
That's what I thought. Nothing else here sounds exactly right, but at least that does. And so they're doing the big thing. So if people want to come out to this, because they do have... there's like a whole tour of the town where you get to see all the different shots from Groundhog Day and all of the different, like where everything took place, like the little hotel. Mm-hmm.
Do you do it over and over and over again?
They do. They actually have tours on the half hour, so that's how that works.
And Woodstock's beautiful, too, so it's fun to hang out there.
Well, I guess, you were part of the production team for that, so they chose Woodstock because it does look like, any great middle American town, right?
Yeah, we were sort of looking for the quintessential American town that didn't have the sort of imprint of time stamped on it. So we spent about a week driving around Illinois and Indiana looking for the perfect town. And most of those little towns, as you know, have sort of been decimated by big box stores. And, either they're dilapidated or there's a McDonald's on every corner and a Starbucks. And we needed something that felt like it was sort of where time had stopped. And after about literally 2 weeks of driving 8 hours a day in a van all over, we came upon Woodstock, and we got out of the van thinking another town that's not going to work. And we looked around and thought, we're home. We found it.
You knew
it. And that was it. That we knew it when we saw it, and that became our town.
Yeah. It is. It does go down as one of the great movies, a movie that does that, where it repeats itself, kind of over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, what is that, Edge of Tomorrow or whatever that Tom Cruise movie does it? It's very hard to do that and make that entertaining, because the editing of the films like that are so important, because you have to be able to pick up, because people don't necessarily want to watch that scene over again. So you got to be it's tricky business.
It was tricky business, and when Harold and I read the script,
Harold Ramis, of course.
Harold Ramis, yes. We immediately thought, this is a fantastic idea. Can it work as a movie? And I don't think we knew really with certainty until we'd finished shooting it and we put it before an audience if they would, go with the conceit of the day repeating over and over again. I mean, it's easy to look back on it and say, of course you must have known, but we really didn't. It was a tightrope act, and I guess we pulled it off if we're still talking about it 25 years later.
And Bill Murray pulled it off, too. But, you mentioned Harold Ramis. I know you worked with Harold Ramis quite a bit. And as a matter of fact, now, I should mention this, because I think this is super cool. There is a program at Second City, right, that is named after Harold Ramis. It's basically a school at Second City.
It's a comedic film school, as best I can tell, the only one in the world that just specializes on teaching filmmakers how to create comedic content. And it's in Harold's name, sort of to honor him, Second City came to me and said, would I be interested in helping? And Harold died about 4 years ago, and it seemed like a great way to sort of keep his legacy going. And hopefully we're generating a new, you know, generation of comedic filmmakers to follow in Harold's footsteps.
And they're just starting now, this program. And, you know, Second City has done such, has left such a mark on American comedy, right?
No question.
Unlike so many other things, you know, there are other programs around the country, and there were other, you know, comedy troupes and things like that. But I think very few institutions have had the kind of impact that Second City has had on pop culture.
No, it's true. I mean, from, you know, Mike Nichols and Elaine May to Belushi and Gilda Radner and Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd to, you know, Stephen Colbert and Tina Fey, it's sort of remarkable. You know, every generation seems to have come at, you know, all these great comedic voices have come out of Second City.
Yeah.
And that's where you met?
Yeah.
That's where you met Ramis also?
No, I met Harold Ramis when I was 22 years old, trying to get into the film business, and I was hired as his assistant on a sort of insane little movie set on a golf course in Florida.
What was it? Now, let me think about Harold Ramis and movies about golf. Let me think about that.
Choice.
What the heck was the name of that movie? I can never remember.
What an opportunity. How cool.
Yeah, so my first job was on the Caddyshack.
Wow.
That's incredible.
I was his assistant, and I was also the gopher who popped out of the golf course hole.
Well, Harold, you were actually the gopher. You were the hand of the gopher. The gopher was.
Yeah, it took you a minute to absorb that.
I know.
Yeah,
Somebody had to play the gopher.
You had the hand. You had your hand up the gopher's butt. Is that what we're saying?
Somebody had to do that, and I was the only one willing.
Did you know going in that was your job? Was that like?
No, in fact, I don't think Harold Jokson says that Caddyshack was his like $7 million film school. Because he'd never made a movie before. And so, you know, the idea of the gopher popping up around the golf course and driving, you know, Bill crazy was in the script, and it seemed like a good idea at the time. But once we got to shooting it, the configuration of the golf course sort of made it complicated. How are we going to do it and not see the person holding it? So the prop guys started digging a hole behind one of the greens, and the hole was so deep that nobody would go into it. It was like, nah, none of the prop guys would go in. And so Harold's like, what are we going to do? And they start looking around. All of a sudden, I see Harold looking at me.
Oh, God.
Next thing I know, I'm down the hole with the, you know, holding the gopher by it.
Yeah, and I got to say that in Florida, which is a very, when you fly over Florida, you realize it lives by the mercy of the ocean, because there's not a whole lot of digging that can go before you hit water.
Swampy.
Or animals that don't have shoulders. And that's where that's all I would think about if I were in a hole in Florida.
I never hit it. But anyway, so yes, that was my auspicious beginning with Harold, and we worked together for the next 22 years.
Wow.
And you're on vacation too, right? You worked on the original Vacation.
No, I did. And Club Paradise and Multiplicity and Bedazzled and whatever. We had a lot of fun together over those years.
Yeah. What a great, you know, Harold Ramis is one of those guys that, you know, he was a quiet figure in Hollywood and Chicago. He lived here. He's one of those guys who, you know, chose to be here before he passed away a few years ago. But he's left an incredible legacy. It's interesting too, because now there is a revisiting with a bunch of different projects, including this documentary that's out, and now an actual narrative film that is out about the beginning of the National Lampoon Radio Hour, and about Doug Kenny and all that. And Harold Ramis was an important part of that. In that documentary that is out about it, Harold Ramis, you see him in the radio studio with Belushi and Gilda Radner and Bill Murray, and you know, as much a part of that as a performer, and you know, and Harold was his own, you know, was in a number of movies and did his own stuff. But you know, he was one of those guys who knew immediately. Listen, I want to run the camera here. I want to write the scripts. I want those guys to be in front.
Yeah, Harold had a great line, which was, people said, "So were you the class clown?" And he said, "No, I wasn't the class clown. I wrote for the class clown."
You can see that,
and I think that was it. That was, you know, he didn't necessarily feel the need to be the loudest one in the room. And with, you know, people like Bill and Chevy and all those people, it was hard to be the loudest person in the room, but he was always the smartest person in the room and quite often the funniest. So
right. Right. Yeah, he absolutely was. And sometimes you would see a young Harold Ramis pop up in things, you know, and you go, hey, oh, wait, oh, what? There he is. So what a great thing. And Trevor, I should mention, and, you know, congratulations on this program at Second City, the Harold Ramis School at Second City. But also, you were part of a documentary that Richard Roper and I had an opportunity to meet Glenn Campbell as a result of this, the Glenn Campbell documentary, I'll Be Me, which was, to me, it gave such hope to people and families who are struggling with relatives who have Alzheimer's disease, because it was Glenn Campbell basically being so brave as to say, I want to share my story and my experience with the world. And watching Glenn Campbell, you know, work his way through trying to still be relevant as a musician, still be relevant as a stage performer, and struggle with that debilitating disease. Really an important, I mean, that's another documentary. It's a couple years old now, but that documentary is definitely worth seeing, especially now that we've lost Glenn.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning it. You know, on the other end of the spectrum from Groundhog Day in many ways, but did you see it on TV, or did you see it with an audience when it screened in Chicago?
We saw it in an audience, and then we got an opportunity to talk to Glenn Campbell. And, you know, and the, one of those things, it was a very, because he was not obviously going to do a lot of interviews. He did Nightline and he did Us and he did a couple of other things. But it was, it just is such a, Glenn Campbell, for those who are not familiar with what Glenn Campbell's, like, you know, we got these millennials on the show, these damn millennials, they don't understand.
They ruin everything.
They do, and they don't understand. Glenn Campbell
Keep
changed.
Them off the show.
Yeah, I would like to, but
okay, let's not go that
but
far.
But they're right in the demo. But the thing, the reality is Glenn Campbell changed the sound of music in America in a lot of ways. As a, you know, as a guitar player, as a, you know, as he had a couple of hits in the 1970s that moved country music into pop music. I mean, he's just one of the most important figures in music of the 20th century, in American music of the 20th century. And, you know,
it's not an easy thing to share.
You know,
you think about your experiences with Alzheimer's, to be brave enough to say, hey, I'm going to open this up in the hopes that it would help other people.
Right.
Yeah. You know, the thing that sort of keyed me in and got me to believe that this could be a movie people would actually come to, because Alzheimer's is, needless to say, not particularly an entertaining disease. And to make a movie about Alzheimer's and hope that people come is a lot to ask. And yet, Glenn's music obviously transcended the disease. He was able to play music at a super high level in spite of his, you know, deteriorating cognitive abilities, which was sort of a miracle. The other thing is his sense of humor.
Yeah.
So he was a huge pop star, a crossover country pop star. You know, had numerous number one songs, but he also had the number one variety show.
Yeah.
You probably remember the Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour, which came after the Smothers Brothers. So he's also a double threat. He was a great musician.
Triple threat, too, because he was also great in True Grit. He became a film star in the 1970s.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I mean, he basically blew John Wayne off the screen in True Grit, which was almost an impossible thing to think about doing, but he did. But it was, I just wanted to mention that. So people have families, you know, that touches your family, or you just want to see a really cool story. The Glenn Campbell I'll Be Me is a great, great documentary.
And it is surprisingly uplifting. It really is about a guy who didn't want to be defined by his disease. You know, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. The doctors, his managers, the agents said, you know, Glenn, it's been a great career, probably time to move off stage and go home. And he and his wife got together with their kids and talked about it. And Glenn said, I don't want to go home. I want to keep playing music as long as I possibly can. And that began this, you know, year and a half tour, which we document in the movie.
And he doesn't lose the music in it. He may lose a lot of other stuff, but he doesn't lose the music. It's just an amazing thing, too. And it's something that doctors and scientists are looking at, too, to figure out, you know, how is it that people are able to do that. All right. Well, you know what, Trevor, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Trevor.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Next time you're in Chicago, stop by. We'll talk more about this because it's really cool stuff.
I would love it. And happy Groundhog Day to you guys.
Thank you. You, too.
Thank you.
People want to go out to Woodstock tomorrow for the 25th anniversary of Groundhog Day. That's what they're doing out in Woodstock is Groundhog Day. Did I say it's Groundhog Day? It's Groundhog Day.
You ever been out there for that?
Groundhog Day.
Oh, gosh.
Violetta's got the WGN traffic trouble spots.
They should listen to us on the way there, too.